So you're saying that Russian choral music developed from a music where there were a lot of chants. It was a chant-based music.
Yes.
And there was conflict within the church as to whether you could bring in other elements.
Yeah, and how those elements would be brought in. So are you allowed to just have chant-inspired melodic material or writing, or should you use the chant as base material and expand from there, or only use the chant and harmonize it? And so it was really an issue of the process by which the composition was brought about. And so it just, you know, people argued.
And what was significant about Tchaikovsky's work?
So Tchaikovsky actually uses some of the chants, as later Rachmaninoff does for some of his music as well. And many other composers before and since have used sort of the chants as a basis. And so he quotes snippets of the chant, and then when he's not quoting chant, he's using the chant formula sort of to always feel like you're listening to a chant in some way, shape, or form. Although it's not a chant that you would sort of be able to necessarily pull out just by hearing, because it's sort of idealized and stylized.
So why did Philadelphia Singers choose this piece to do?
Well, I think that the Tchaikovsky being an early sort of harbinger of things to come in terms of Russian sacred music, it sets itself as a Russian piece. It's not trying to be Italianate like some earlier Russian composers who were schooled in that style. And it's not overly idealized. It's a rather straightforward. It's a piece that sort of brings all of what you expect to hear in a Russian choral piece to light in a really concise way without being sort of overdone or the sense that it's been worked into it. It just sort of happens. It's very natural.
What do you expect to hear in a Russian choral piece?
I think we should expect to hear a lot of doubling. And so we have lots of different parts singing the same music at octaves, sometimes many octaves, and also a sort of expansiveness that doesn't entirely fit with the Western idea of tonal progression or harmony necessarily. So we'll hear more modal influences, not as in the Tchaikovsky, not as much as some other Russian pieces, but you'll hear a harmonic language that sounds accessible and is accessible and is understood, but isn't as clear cut as what was going on in the other parts of the world.
And that's what you expect to hear.
I think that's what you would expect to hear.
And it's a cappella?
It's a cappella, yeah. And so it goes a cappella from the beginning to the end, and it's a blast. It's a blast to sing, and I think it really brings a mysticism to text, that some of which will sound familiar if you read the translations. Much of it is familiar if you are a churchgoer or have ever heard sort of an ordinary mass, a setting of the mass ordinary, but with some minor differences because of the split that occurred so long ago that they have their own, as every church does, their own way to express their faith.
What elements give it a kind of mystical quality?
With the Tchaikovsky, the mystical qualities as a whole, if you were to see the whole liturgy or hear the whole liturgy, be part of it in a liturgical setting, the mystical quality is that from beginning to end, there's this sort of large scale progression, and there's no sense of one thing being finished and then the next begins. It just is this sort of large progression from beginning to end. Then we get to Schnitka. So Schnitka who wrote his concerto for choir in the 1980s, is writing in a country that doesn't outwardly appreciate the religion in which he's suggesting with the piece and the text, or overtly suggesting. And so he takes on a much more mystical world than Tchaikovsky does. Tchaikovsky's a little less, but Schnitka's world is a lot more mystical and a lot more perhaps in the mind, I think, you know, some sort of meditative world in which religion is important, but there's this large scale move. And you could listen, I think, from beginning to end. And unless there were breaks, you may not entirely know when one movement is over, because the seams are a little bit less obvious. Certainly you'd know that something else began, but is it a new section of a movement or is it a new movement? It's a little harder to tell.
Is it sacred music too, the Shnitka?
It's sacred, or perhaps it's spiritual. I mean, the text is written by an Armenian monk, and so it's sacred. It's not liturgical text, and so I think we have to be clear about that, that the Tchaikovsky is liturgical text, and Shnitka is choosing sacred texts, or perhaps spiritual texts that have become sacred.
When you say it's more mystical, what do you, are you talking about its melody or harmony or rhythm or what effect he's trying to create?
I think that it's all of those. It is both melody and harmony and rhythm. And so in, you know, throughout, he'll, Shnitka begins the piece with a rather soft on D, and he likes D major or D, tonal center D, but he likes D. And it sort of represents light to him. And we end in D. And then we have this sort of big progression around D and hints around D. And so he begins with this rather large, soft, very soft. It sort of comes out of nowhere. B minor, but that always comes back to D. It's always centering around D. He likes to move in and out of that. And it just unfolds. And then it collapses and unfolds again. And he keeps, and by process of unfolding, and then restarting and unfolding, I think you begin even in the first minute to understand that the piece, this isn't something that you're going to just hum a tune. You're not going to walk away humming a tune, but it's an experience that from beginning to end, you'll sort of, it will gather itself around you. And if you let it sort of experience it. And that's, I think, the half part of the idea of the mysticism behind it is that it is happening and you just sort of have to allow it to happen.
What's the significance of the setting,
of the
place you've chosen to perform it?
I think that the cathedral basilica, just the volume of space, it's a beautifully impressive building, both inside and out. And inside, being so large and voluminous, I think that it affords these sorts of, these two pieces specifically, a chance to breathe. And the, you know, and when you're in spaces that large and reverberant and helpful for singing, it really does allow, the building becomes part of the instrument. So it becomes part of the choir. It effectively becomes one of the singers, and it carries a lot of what is going on with the piece. And so you can tailor, you know, if you may not, because it's so reverberant, you can take a little bit more time here, a little bit more time there. And so you get a chance to breathe. And then it becomes part of that, the air of it becomes part of the piece, which then becomes part of the experience for the listener and the singer. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.